Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Minnesota Republican Brad Finstead, who joins us to discuss this week's E15 news and the upcoming Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Labor Department is changing the way it calculates wages owed to foreign-born agricultural workers. The DOL will calculate wages for H-2A workers based on USDA's Farm Labor Survey and will use Bureau of Labor Statistics data to calculate wages for other jobs. The department estimated the changes would cost employers about $38 million a year. Ag groups criticized the rule, saying it would make labor and, in turn, food more expensive. USDA's Equity Commission has delivered a slate of interim recommendations to the department. The commission was charged with improving access for USDA programs for underserved producers. Many of the group's recommendations on just how to make that happen are already being implemented by the department. The delivery came on the final day at the office for Deputy Ag Secretary Jule Bernaugh, who co-chaired the commission. And finally, the Biden administration took action on E15 this week, but is delaying a decision called for by many in the biofuels industry. The Environmental Protection Agency is proposing to allow for summer E15 sales in 8 Midwestern states beginning in summer 2024. The agency was petitioned to make the change last April, but did not respond until this week. EPA says the delay is necessary due to the complicated logistics of the fuel supply chain and the lead time needed to put higher ethanol blends in the pipeline. That infuriates the biofuels industry, who is expecting the change to be effective for the summer of 2023. Congressman Brad Finstead has been vocal on the issue in the House and says the Biden administration needs to ensure the fuel can be sold this summer.
We're going to have to ask for another waiver. I mean, it's kind of this piecemeal approach. I'm disappointed that we weren't able to get to a conclusion sooner and just create some certainty in that marketplace. But moreover, that the opportunity for our farmers to keep producing and being a major part of our energy production, but then also on the consumer side of it, it's a price issue, right? So we're dealing with some really tough times when it comes to inflation and gas prices, and this is a real low cost alternative opportunity for consumers. So I'm disappointed we're not able to move on it faster. However, it is nice to see that 2024. But yeah, we'll keep pushing however we can to create some real, strong long-term consistency on this issue.
Well, and one of the options that has been available, throughout this time is legislation. And of course, that was introduced in previous Congresses, including one effort with the support of the American Petroleum Institute in the last Congress. Haven't really seen that particular piece of legislation. But I will ask, is the legislative route even a solution here? Because could that be implemented in time to do something this summer if EPA just sat on a petition for 10 months?
I'm sure that we will start having those really serious, quick conversations on that issue. We have to be conscious of the fact that, we have the opportunity to do that from a legislative standpoint. So I think that option needs to be on the table.
It's on the table, but the bill did have the support of API in the last Congress, as I said. But is that going to be enough to move legislation? I mean, is that enough momentum on Capitol Hill, that and the fact that you've got this 2023 question mark right now?
Yeah, I tell people all the time that a lot of what we do becomes a math problem. And so how do we get to 218 in the House? How do we make sure that we're properly educating our fellow colleagues on the issue and the importance, to the American public? I will say we have a few things going in our favor right now, and that is really inflation, high energy costs. And this is a lower cost alternative that consumers are really telling. I mean, they're telling us with their feet and credit cards. They're buying it at the pump. We know it's a commodity. We know it's an energy source that people want.
So I want to talk to you about nutrition, given your position as the subcommittee chair in that subject. But before I do that, just generally speaking, as we look at the process of drafting a new farm bill, how do you think you and your colleagues are doing in terms of a pace right now?
Well, the pace needs to pick up, and we know that. A couple of days ago, we just got the final committee appointments in regards to the Democrats on the committee. So now I think the team, we know the team, so we got to start running the plays. And so I'm really excited to serve with Chairman Thompson and his leadership. He is really focused on making sure that we do what I want to do here is we want a farm bill that's, by the farmers, for the farmers. So we had a hearing just this week in regards to just listening to you know, what are folks in the countryside telling us that their priorities are, and then really taking that in and start, you know, start the blocking and tackling of putting a bill together. We have a couple of great things going for us. We have a farm bill right now that's pretty good, right? People will agree pretty much border to border all across this country that the farm bill that we have right now is a good starting point. So we have to really like lean in and listen to, all right, where are there opportunities to tweak, you know, massage the edges and make this just even more user-friendly for the farmers and those in rural America.
We'll be right back with more from Congressman Finstad right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Congressman Brad Finstad has been chosen to chair the House Ag Subcommittee with jurisdiction over nutrition policy. He says it's a position he plans to use holistically as the next farm bill is developed.
Yeah, so I mean, first of all, and you know, you know this, it's a very important part of the farm bill. It's an important part of the process to, again, make sure we get to 218 votes. And so it is 80%+ of the overall farm bill. So it's really important. So there's a couple of key things that we have to make sure that we're keeping our eye on. And one that, you know, it needs to be a strong, secure program, a secure area that's really all about, you know, offering people a hand up, not just a handout. How are we helping our neighbors in need really get to that next point in their life? And so it's we got to focus on that. But we also have to focus on the fact, because it is 80%+ of the overall farm bill, that, you know, we're stewards of the taxpayers' dollars. And so we have to make sure that there's strong accountability accountability measures in the farm bill, and you know, really that checks and balances to make sure we're doing things right. So and then there's also that opportunity to just make sure we keep innovating, we keep embracing technology and opportunities to make that program and the delivery of those programs better, and educating and making sure that we're educating folks on you know, the nutritional component of it, and that we're really just working again to help our neighbors in need. And that'll be our focus. The other piece of this is we also have to make sure that we're communicating and educating fellow members of Congress.
So understanding the political math that you've talked about here during this interview, and understanding kind of your path to 218 in the House, there's obviously a lot of folks in the Republican Party that would seek some very, very frankly massive cuts and reforms and big changes to SNAP and other government nutrition programs. Are you going to be able to satisfy their demands for those kinds of changes, or are you going to have to moderate that title to keep things to a position of where Democratic support is still a possibility?
The beauty of a farm bill has been traditionally, it is very bipartisan. It is very bipartisan. We have people that come from all different corners of this country that have an interest in it. And so we have to first and foremost make sure we're protecting and keeping the bill together in regards to keeping the nutrition title a part of the farm bill, because that really is a helpful component to bring folks to the bill and to the table. But we also have to make sure that we're just, you know, good stewards of the tax dollars, and that we're listening to folks that maybe have some concerns and try to navigate those waters. So, you know, to me, really, this process is going to be about relationships. It's going to be about having conversations with our colleagues, all walks of life, all, you know, all both sides of the aisle, and just really try to put something together that we can be proud of.
And quickly here, Congressman, before we wrap up, some of your colleagues have brought up the idea of perhaps strengthening work requirements, doing some changes in that subject. I wonder, is the existing SNAP work requirement sufficient, or is that something that needs to be changed in the upcoming Farm Bill?
Yeah, so this is the area where, again, it goes to communicating and really making sure people understand the program. You know, the work requirements that we have in place have been in place for years. Where there has been some disconnect is where different states have used the waiver process through block grants to circumvent the eligibility areas. And that's the conversation really that we need to have. So we need to make sure people understand and you know, fellow folks in Congress need to understand that the work requirement piece has been in place and it has worked in the nutrition title. It's the waiver process that different governors have used to circumvent the process. So again, it's education, it's talking about the program, making sure folks understand, you know, how block grants are tied to this. And so, yeah, it's there's some complexity to it.
Complexity always the name of the game in the Farm Bill process. Certainly many things to keep an eye on as we watch that process unfold with you and your colleagues. Congressman Finstad, thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pagel has a look at the nation's wheat crop in this week's Map It Out.
American producers are planting more winter wheat. This map shows the rise and fall of winter wheat acreage across the country this year. The darker the blue, the bigger the increase. The darker the red, the more the decrease. Illinois, Indiana, and Alabama have the most year-over-year acreage growth. Georgia, Wisconsin, and Arkansas are losing the most acres. USDA is reporting nearly 37 million acres of winter wheat were planted this year, an increase of more than 11%. That makes up the majority of the total wheat acreage for the year, which USDA estimates at 49.5 million acres. If realized, that would be the highest wheat acreage in the country since 2017. The rise comes as the world continues to adapt to changes in the global wheat market, in large part due to supply challenges in the Black Sea region. It's been more than a year since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, when wheat prices hit all-time highs. Now, there's more on the market thanks to the expected high exports from Russia and the resumed exports from Ukraine. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's replacing petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who mapped the soybean genome for better varieties? You did. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are going to convene a panel discussion to study national nutrition issues facing the upcoming Farm Bill. Joined this week by a couple of experts on the subject, joined by Gina Platanino with the Food Research and Action Center, as well as Robert Rector with the Heritage Foundation. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Gina, I want to go to you first, because right now we're facing, as you well know, kind of a looming benefit cliff that has either hit many SNAP recipients across the country or will hit them soon. But I wonder, you know, is SNAP support adequate absent, you know, once that benefit cliff hits, is SNAP support adequate to meet the needs that are out there?
No, you know, without the emergency allotments, as you mentioned, we are looking at about $6 a day. The current, you know, there were upgrades to the Thrifty Food Plan, and that brought it up, you know, quite a bit, but not enough to be able to make ends meet for most families. So we are definitely going to see a lot of individuals visiting food banks.
So then when we think about that, you know, we have a an upcoming Farm Bill, of course, and many folks on Capitol Hill wondering if this is a program that might be in line for what they would term a streamlining, other people might call cuts, you know, whatever nomenclature one might want to use. Is this a program that can withstand less finances in the Farm Bill?
Not at all. If you look at the multiplier effect that SNAP has on the local economy and job creation, you know, these funds go to the local economy. Municipalities and states cannot handle the impact that these emergency allotments are ending. putting additional cuts at a time where inflation is high, when eggs and milk is incredibly expensive for individuals, would be extremely harmful. Take, for example, our older population, which they are the ones which our research shows will be most affected, going from $281 to $23 a month. Just kind of think where you can get food for a whole month for $23. And even though SNAP is a supplemental program, in reality, for many individuals, low-income Americans who are utilizing this program, it is their whole source of budget. So we are rather concerned about this. So definitely no cuts. This isn't the same as 2018, where the economy was stable. Our economy has been harmed by the pandemic, by, you know, job creation, and individuals need as much assistance as possible. And the last thing I'll say is just think about that for every meal that a food bank provides, SNAP provides 9 meals. So there's no stay local program that can take the place of SNAP.
So Robert, let's discuss the politics at play here, because obviously when we look at the situation, Republicans do have a majority in the House, but it's not as if they have a broad majority in the House that would allow them to enact some kind of some of the broad reforms that some of their members might prefer. But there is also a Democratic Senate, a Democratic White House. They're going to need Democratic support to pass a farm bill in the House of Representatives. All of that in mind, are major cuts, major reforms to nutrition programs, including SNAP, are they possible in this upcoming farm bill?
Well, first of all, it's extremely misleading to talk about cuts. USDA just implemented administratively a 20% increase in food stamp benefits a year ago, boosting the entire budget of USDA by 10% without any legal authority to do that, without any regulatory process. So it's a huge increase. We're talking about cuts to people that are pretty high income here. The first thing, if we're talking about spending for the poor, you have to have is an accurate count of what resources are already out there, and it has to be holistic. There are 90 different programs that provide cash, food, housing, and medical care to poor people. And in the normal government poverty statistics, for example, that USDA uses, 95% of those are not counted as income when you're measuring poverty. Food stamps is not income, for example.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Who increased sales to Egypt 700%? You did. Who's the number one protein in chicken feed? You are. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. The Farm Bill has long contained commodity and nutrition programs as a way to pull support from multiple communities toward final passage. But Robert Rector and his colleagues at the Heritage Foundation argue that's not the best approach to government policy.
I'm an old political scientist, and that process of forming a coalition of special interests to get more spending is pretty bad for the taxpayer, and it doesn't produce good policies. My recommendation is actually to take all of the food, housing, and cash aid that goes to poor people, put it in one committee in Congress so that you talk about it holistically rather than a piecemeal basis. And so you have a more accurate count of what's really going there, because almost no one receives just food stamps, particularly if they're poor. They will also be getting benefits from four or five different programs. And for the most part, they all have earnings too. And all of those things, when we have these discussions, are not counted at all, or they're significantly undercounted. And so you don't have a rational basis for even having this discussion. You have to have correct information before you talk about spending more or about spending less.
So then, you know, understanding the where Heritage stands on current views on SNAP, the government welfare structure as you all see it, if the current structure is not the answer, you mentioned the possibly moving everything to one committee, but if the current programs themselves are not the answer, what is?
It's not really that we spend too much or too little, although we do spend 5% of the GDP, about $1.4 trillion, on cash, food, housing, and medical care for poor people, and that doesn't include Social Security or Medicare. It's an enormous amount of spending, all of which is kind of off the books and not counted. But the real problem isn't excessive spending, it's that most of these programs discourage work and marriage. So we can fix all of that. We can make these programs much more work-friendly. We can have friendly work requirements in them. We did that in welfare reform in the 1990s, and it caused dramatic reductions in poverty. We can do that again in all these other programs. And it's not a matter of cutting people off. And it's not a matter of spending more or less money. We can do it with the huge existing resources we have.
Gina, I want to wrap up the conversation with you because as we look ahead, obviously the upcoming Farm Bill is going to involve a lot of nutrition conversation. We see every month now reports on what grocery prices are doing across the country, just how far that SNAP dollar can stretch. So I wonder your thoughts on how you expect the current food price situation to impact the nutrition debate in the upcoming Farm Bill.
I think we look at the food plan in terms of, again, the thrifty food plan doesn't take into account these rising prices or where people live. The low cost food plan is really more accurate that takes in all of this. And just, you know, in terms of clarifications, you know, it's incredibly, you know, incredibly difficult. While there may be programs out there for individuals, they're incredibly difficult to access. And in terms of, like, you know, you talked about nutrition and who's utilizing SNAP, majority of that is children and older adults. So I think that's part of the conversation in terms of what nutrition should look like to make sure that the future of our nation is being well fed and ensure that there's adequate benefits.
Very good. Well, obviously, the nutrition title is going to be a very important part of the politics surrounding the upcoming Farm Bill. Certainly more to discuss both today and later on. We appreciate both of you joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel has a look at the conservation needs of the nation's producers in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service is facing a worker shortage. The timing isn't great as the agency is expecting a bump in demand for conservation technical assistance as it implements billions in funding from the Inflation Reduction Act. Private sector conservation experts can help with work normally done by NRCS staff through the agency's Technical Service Provider Program. TSPs often help producers draft management plans, as well as design and implement conservation practices for farms. This chart shows the number of active and certified TSPs from 2003 to 2022. There are currently nearly 1,500 active and certified TSPs this year, compared to just over 1,000 last year. Many TSPs decide to drop out of the program because of poor pay and a tedious certification process that must be renewed every 3 years. Experts say USDA will have to look into fixing those issues, as well as possibly changing the application process to attract and maintain more TSPs to meet the increased demand. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. This year, we'll focus on next-gen food and farm policy as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy discussions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 20th at the National Press Club in Washington and through our virtual experience. Take advantage of early bird rates until February 15th. Register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The White House is expected to roll out its fiscal 2024 budget on Thursday. Senate Ag plans to convene an oversight hearing of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission on Wednesday. And this year's Commodity Classic will be taking place in Orlando, Florida. Hope to see many of you there. As always, we'll have the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.